I want to share a few ideas with you this morning before I get into the lesson. Relative to my meeting work, the brunt of my meeting work has been finished. I have conducted 11 meetings so far this year, and I only have 6 scheduled the rest of the year, and 3 of those I will be here one of the times on those Sundays, so I won't be gone nearly as much for the rest of the year. In fact, during the month of July, we have 5 Sundays. I will miss one Sunday morning and one Sunday night on different Sundays. In August, I have 2 meetings. In September, I have none. In October, I have one that involves a Sunday morning only and one that's just Sunday through Tuesday. And then after the second week of October, I do not have another meeting scheduled at this point until May. I expect to have one in April that will be scheduled, but I'm going to be with you most of the time now and not gone as much as I have been. I'm sorry in one way that I've been gone, but I'm thankful to be able to be doing what I believe is a good work. I also want to observe a thing or two with you about the church. I was just thinking back this week when I'm in a motel away from home. About all I have to do is think. And I do a lot of planning. In fact, I may do more when I'm gone relative to our work than I do when I'm here. But I was just thinking, when I started here in November of 2010, John and Yvonne were sitting over here on the seat. Miss Annie Russell was sitting back there. Johnny Vollner was here at every service. D.V. Peterson and Dorothy Williams were usually here at least every Sunday morning, sitting on the second seat or third over here. And Martha Cooper and Rodney and sometimes Lisa were all 3 here at about every service. This morning, as I look out, in addition to those that we've mentioned as being sick, I can think of some 7 or 8, maybe 9, that are members here that are not here this morning. I'm sure that some of them are out of town. But I think we do need to be a little bit concerned about those that have been attending. We've picked up 9 members in the last few months. Of course, Dennis and Molly Ray are not able to be with us now because of Molly's sickness particularly. But we picked up 6 of the Scots, and we picked up, of course, Norma, in a sense, had been here before, but has been with us regularly now. And so because of what I have said, our numbers have stayed about the same. I talked to a lady this week that's a member of the church and has been going to the Christian church, and I think maybe we can do some good there. And we're just going to have to start reaching out one for one. But when I consider everything that has happened, we've lost 2 members in death, Miss Annie and Mr. John. And this morning in the nursing homes, assisted living, we have 3 or 4 that were here in attendance when I began my work here. So it's important, I think, for us to keep things in mind and not become discouraged, but to realize what the facts are and work. There are people that are not here this morning that maybe you can encourage to be here. Of course, I know we mentioned Lee and Mr. Gilbert that are sick at home this morning, and they're usually here when they're able to be here. And let's do everything we can to encourage one another, and I'll do everything that I can to promote the work. And as you have suggestions for me, please make those. At the beginning of the year, I began a series of lessons on lessons from animals. The one today is the end of this series. This makes 17 lessons, if I have counted right, that I have preached, 2 general lessons on animals, and then 15 on specific animals, lessons from them down through the Bible. On Sunday nights, we've been discussing lessons from Bible characters, and I have 3 or 4 more of those that I want to bring. I have mentioned in the bulletin some different types of lessons, and I've tried to analyze these. I'm going to begin next Sunday morning a series of lessons on the theme of written and read. A few years ago, I developed 22 lessons on this theme. Someone said back then that what Jesus said in the Bible is more important than what Peter and Paul said. I don't believe that. I believe all the Bible is God's Word. But I sat down and did some research and some study from the standpoint, if we only had what Jesus said, could we still basically teach the truth? And I want to show you on 22 different subjects at least, and I may develop some more of these, that if we only read what's in red, and in these lessons we will basically limit the scriptures that we use to that which is written in red. And I want to show you that if we only took what Jesus said, that we would still have the basic fundamental truths of the Bible. And another thing that this is going to do is to give us variety in that the subjects will be different. It'll be the theme of what Jesus wrote. But we'll have 22 different subjects during that series, and that should take us to just about the end of the year on Sunday mornings. And I haven't decided what we'll be using on Sunday nights after we finish the series on lessons from Bible characters. This morning, I want us to think about the camel. I had never done much study on the camel before. I have prepared this lesson in the last few weeks as a part of this series on animals. In fact, I've prepared three or four new ones after we started, the one on the mules and the one on the wolves, and this one particularly, as I remember. But I want us to think about the camel this morning. I heard a rather laughable definition of a camel. Somebody said that a camel is a mule put together by a committee. I like that definition because one of the things that I don't especially like is having too many committees. I've been in some organizations where we committed ourselves to death and we spent more time meeting in a committee than we did doing any work. And if you get a committee together that's got a lot of people, you know how the discussion goes. So somebody said a camel is a horse that's put together by a committee. And that doesn't have a thing to do with the lesson this morning, but I thought that you needed to know that. There are four basic things that are said in the Bible about camels. One has to do with their work and what they are capable of doing. And then in the New Testament, particularly, there are three uses of this word from which we can get a specific lesson in each case. The camel has become known as the beast of burden, especially in the Middle East. We do not use camels in this area. We may see them in zoo or unusual circumstances, but we do not use them as we do mules and horses and donkeys to carry goods. But in the Middle East, even today, with certain groups of people, the camel is the mainstay. There are probably two reasons for that. Camel is able to carry quite a bit of weight, and that's the reason the word burden is associated with it. And the camel is able to consume a great deal of water at one time to where it's able to travel a long distance without having to be watered. And in the desert areas particularly, that is extremely important. We find the Bible talking about camels in different ways. You may remember that when Joseph was sold into Egypt in Genesis 37, that the Ishmaelites were coming, and they saw the Ishmaelites with their camels coming. They were on a trip down to Egypt. They were taking perhaps things to sell and maybe intended to buy other things, but the camels at that time were very much involved in being the means by which they could carry things from one place to another. In 2 Kings 8 and verse 9, presents were brought to Elisha, and included in that were some camels. In Genesis 24:61, when Rebekah came to become the wife of Isaac, she was riding on a camel. And you may remember that the way in which she was selected was that the servant of Abraham said that whoever comes out and offers me a drink and says, I'll draw water for your camels, will be the one that that God would be placing his approval on. So camels were very much involved in that story. In 1 Samuel 30 and 17, it mentions 400 people riding on camels. When the Queen of Sheba came to see Solomon in his glory, according to 2 Chronicles 9 and verse 1, she was riding on a camel. The camel is an animal that's very dependable for that which is expected of it, especially in carrying things, as we said. It is an animal that's not fast, but is persistent. Just keeps on keeping on doing that which its owner wants it to do. It is capable, it is able of doing that work that is needed. I think the main lesson for us in this is that any particular animal, and for that matter, any particular person, may have certain qualities that are very important, and that animal or that person can become important in a work as long as the talents and the abilities that are there are used, and we do not expect things beyond the abilities that are there. There are some things that if you needed to do, you would not want a camel to use. There are some things that a camel cannot do, but it does have its place, it does have its capabilities, and if used in the right way, can be very serviceable. We need to keep that before us in the work of the church. Not every one of us can do the same thing. Some of us are capable of doing certain things, others are capable of doing other things. But when we put all of us together and we use what we can use, and at the same time accept our limitations of things that we are not good at or cannot do or do not have the ability to do, the Lord's work can grow and go on. And so I think there is a lesson for us in this sense, that the camel as a beast of burden, though it's slow and moves slowly in its travel, still has a place for those who have the needs that the camel can supply. And each one of us has a place in the Lord's work when we can supply something that can be helpful. In the New Testament, in the first place, the camel is mentioned in connection with the clothing of John the Baptist. You remember that it says that he was in the wilderness preaching, and his clothing was a camel's hair and a leathern girdle. Camel's hair was at that time, and I suppose even today if it's used, something that was considered to be rather cheap. And those that were poor and could not afford other types of clothing would use camel's hair, probably having to mix it with something else, maybe a little bit of wool, but still cheaper. And those who were poor were usually the ones that had this kind of clothing. And so it has a significant point when it is mentioned in connection with John the Baptist. Someone who was suffering especially financial problems would use that kind of clothing. It indicates to us that John the Baptist was certainly not a rich person, that he certainly did not have very much of his own as he was going about preparing the way for Christ to come. There are two words that we might associate with this. One is the word humility, and one is the word modest. Those who dress in modest ways, not trying to be expensive, not trying to be elaborate, are probably those that are more pleasing to God, who use common sense, at least, in that which is available to them. And sometimes a person who dresses that way might be one who's very humble, might feel ashamed, and yet knowing the circumstances should not feel ashamed, but be thankful to be able to use that which he has. But the camel's hair was used as a mark of clothing for someone who maybe did not have as much as the average person, and it would suggest humility and modesty. The second place that I call your attention to in the New Testament where the camel is mentioned has to do with swallowing a camel. Jesus said, "You strain at a gnat and swallow a camel." in the King James Version. Other versions translate that, ye strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. And perhaps that's the better translation. At least it makes more sense to me, and I get the picture of it better. When you think about swallowing a gnat, straining out a gnat, you get the idea that a little bug gets in your throat and you want to cough it up and get rid of it right quickly. But the straining out a gnat reminds me of when I was growing up on the farm, especially dealing with milking and taking care of that milk. Many times we would strain the milk through a cloth that we had, I suppose something like a flour sack or something like that, and we would strain the milk through that after we had milked to get any little bug or any little piece of trash out of it. Sometimes in going to the barn to milk, with the dirt that was at the barn and maybe the dirt that was on the cow, it would be hard to milk without getting some kind of foreign object in that milk. And I remember almost without exception, every time I would come back to the house with a bucket of milk, that mother would strain it or show me how to pour that milk through a cloth that would strain out the things that we didn't want in the milk. And that was the best way that we had of pasteurizing the milk, was to try to get rid of the foreign objects that were in it. And to me, when I think of that, it shows me exactly what Jesus is talking about. He said, you are so concerned about little things that might be bad in and of themselves, and you want to get rid of them, but then you turn around and swallow a camel. Well, this is a figure of speech I guess you'd call a hyperbole in the English language. It's an exaggeration. He didn't mean literally that someone could swallow a camel, but he meant that sometimes the actions that we have when we are so picky about some little things and then condone so many other things that are bigger, that it'd be like straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. And I suspect that every last one of us who's here this morning is guilty of that. It's another way of saying what Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount about the mote and the beam. You remember in those first five verses of Matthew 7? He said that you can see that little mote that's in your brother's eye, but you can't see the beam that's in your own eye. He could have used this same expression that's here in our text today to say the same thing. He could have said, you see the little gnat that's in your brother's eye, but you can't even see the camel that you are swallowing. And that happens so many times because, let's face it, most of us have our own pet ideas. Even preachers, I think, have some things about which they are against. And no matter what subject they have, it seems they can work that into the sermon somewhere. And then on the other hand, especially as time goes by, we have a tendency to allow ourselves to accept things that we would not have accepted some time ago. Now, that's not always bad, because if we've been straining out the gnat, we need to learn over a period of time not to do that so badly. And there are some things, I guess, that all of us would accept today that we did not accept years ago because we've learned more and we put it in focus. But I really believe that there are a lot of sins and problems in life that we at one time would stand completely against, and then as time goes on, we begin to soften a little bit. And there may be several reasons for that. But we begin to condone things. I think that's how some of the false doctrines have crept into the church. And that's how some immoral words and actions have crept into our vocabularies and our lives. There were words, for example, that were considered very ugly at one time, and maybe they're not considered ugly. Now, sometimes the meaning of a word will change, but I think a lot of this is that we just quit standing against things, and maybe sometimes subconsciously at least, we say, what's the use? Why preach against these things? People are not going to listen anyway. When in reality, we need to come back to God's Word and let it be the standard, not binding where God is not bound would be the idea of straining out a gnat. And not loosing where God is not loosed would be the idea of swallowing a camel. You see, if we make God's law more narrow than he makes it, we would be straining out the gnat. But if we make it not as narrow as he makes it, and we say, well, it's okay for you to do something when God has said it's not okay, we would be swallowing the camel. So there's a great lesson in this for us. He said, you strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. We have a tendency to have some things that we're just so petty about and so specific. And then other things, maybe where we should take a stronger stand, that we don't. So I believe there's a great lesson in this for us. You strain out a gnat and you swallow a camel. The third use in the New Testament and the fourth use that we're making this morning is in a passage like Luke 18, 25 through 27. And it has to do with the needle's eye. Jesus was discussing the difficulty of a rich person going to heaven. And before we go any further, let me skip down a verse or two and notice that it says, with God all things are possible. Jesus was not teaching here that it's impossible for a rich person to be a Christian or to go to heaven. He was teaching the difficulty, especially for those who place too much trust in riches. And in connection with that, he said it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to go to heaven. Well, you and I would tend to draw from that that it was impossible, and I think that's the reason he went ahead and said, with God all things are possible. There is some discussion about what he means exactly here by the needle's eye. Those of you that sew, and especially you, Elizabeth, understand how difficult it is sometimes to thread a needle. With my big fingers, it's almost impossible for me to thread a needle. They've come out with some things now that are supposed to help you. But still, threading a needle is difficult for me. It is difficult to get that thread through that little eye that is in the needle. It seems to me over a period of time, those eyes have gotten smaller. That's not the eyes that have changed. It's some other eyes that have changed, I think. But there was also a place in Bible lands that was called Needle's Eye. It was a very narrow passage to where, as I understand it, it would have been extremely difficult for a larger person or a larger animal to go through, and that it was just a very, very, very narrow passage. And it was generally known that it was almost impossible for anything to pass through that needle's eye, as it was called. Now, I can't prove either way, which is exactly what Jesus is talking about, and I don't think it matters, because he's not talking about a literal needle's eye in either case. He's talking about a principle that is involved. And it may very well be that he had in mind that place that would have been familiar to all the people more than just the eye of a needle. But for us today, we're more familiar with the eye of a needle with which you would sew than we would that place. And in either case, what he is saying is that there is an opening there, and it is possible to thread the needle, or it is possible for something to go through it, but all of us understand that it's extremely difficult. And by using the camel, which would have been a larger animal, if the problem was too narrow, it would have been a problem, or if it were something that was low, it would have been a problem. He's saying you wouldn't expect a camel to go through the eye of a needle, but you expect a rich man to go to heaven. And he said it's just as easy for one as it is the other, emphasizing the difficulty involved. And the lesson that you and I need to learn from that is the difficulties that riches can bring. Riches do not necessarily bring difficulties. It is not a sin to have money. Money is not the sin. And you know that if you'll quote that verse. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. It's the attitude that we take toward it. And I'm persuaded that there are people who do not have a lot of money who are going to lose their souls because of the love of money, as well as those who do have a lot of money. There's a little poem that I heard one time that it's not so much what you'd do if a million became your lot as what you're doing now with the dollar and a quarter you got. Well, we may not have as much money as somebody else, but what's important is how do we use what we have? What is our attitude toward what we have? However the amount is, what's our attitude toward it? You remember Jesus said in Matthew 6, you cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon's the god of money. And if a person who has very little spends all of his time thinking about earthly possessions, and that's what takes his time and efforts instead of serving God, he can be guilty of serving the god of mammon even though he has very little of this earth's possessions. What Jesus is trying to get across is that we need to have the right attitude. And remember the story that may even be associated with this of the rich young ruler, who evidently was a very moral person, a very good person as far as trying to keep the law under which he was living. And yet the Bible says he went away sorrowful because he was very rich. And Jesus was using that to teach the same lesson that he is with the camel. We need to learn to have the right attitude toward earthly possessions. You see, we are stewards of God, 1 Corinthians 4:2. And whether we have just a little or we have a lot, we are stewards to use that which we have. I've had some friends down through the years that had quite a bit of money. In fact, I have benefited from some of those friends. And I have seen people who were millionaires who were literally giving away more each day than several of us together would have made. I know of a person right now that's related to me who has been well blessed, who gives away probably as much as I make during a year. And when that attitude is there of using earthly possessions, I think that a side lesson here is that God will even bless that person. He says, you use what you've got in the right way and I'll open the windows of heaven. I believe that's true, though we need to be careful in trying to understand all the specifics. But if we use what we have to support our families, to pay our bills, and to be ready to give to him that will ask of us, Ephesians chapter 4 says, then God is going to be pleased with us as stewards. But if we hoard what we have and try to hold on to everything and save every penny without doing what we should do to support the Lord's work and to our families and to help others, then we would be guilty of what's being talked about in this passage. And so the lesson is not necessarily a literal camel that's going through the needle's eye, but again, an exaggeration to show the difficulty for a person with a lot of this earth's possessions to go to heaven if he doesn't have the right attitude toward those. It's interesting to me how you can take a subject from the Bible, and this is the first time I've ever preached a lesson on camels in all my preaching. But you can take a subject, and if you'll research what the Bible has to say, there's a lot of good that can be learned from it. We've learned four lessons today from the camels. Number one, that the camel has some ability that can be used, and yet he has some limitations. Use what he can do, and he's worth something. Number two, camel's hair is suggested that we need to be careful that we don't go beyond that which is reasonable in our living and even in our clothing. And then swallowing a camel teaches us the lesson to be careful that we don't get to where we condone things that we shouldn't condone. And the needle's eye, that we need to have the right attitude toward this earth's possessions. And so I present those lessons to us for us to consider and apply in our own lives. Now, let's conclude with this, where Jesus said, with God, all things are possible. Perhaps all of us at one time or another think, well, will I ever make it to heaven? Do I deserve heaven? We tend to think in the wrong way there. And maybe there are things in my life that are going to keep me from heaven. Remember, with God, all things are possible. If we will put things in proper focus, give up anything that we should, take up what we should, and keep up in the Lord's service, any one of us can go to heaven if we'll do the things that God has told us and live the Christian life. And that's perhaps the greatest lesson that we need to learn out of all of this. God teaches us to believe, repent, confess, and be baptized for the remission of sins. If you haven't done that, you need to consider doing that. Teaches us to repent and confess our faults one to another when our faults are public, and pray one for another. If either of those is your needs, come as together we stand and sing.
We are the promises, kind is the word, dearer far than any message man ever heard. You are the mind of Christ, sinless I see. He, the great example, is a pattern for me. Oh, where he leads, I fire, he leads, I follow all the way. Where he leads, I fire, he leads, I follow Jesus every day. Sweet is the tender love shown, sweeter far than any love that mortals have known. Kind to the erring one, faithful is he. He, the great example, is a pattern for me. Where he leads, I
leads our fire.